We're doing Shmona Prakim. We're holding in the second, the beginning of the second chapter. We had seen in the first chapter the Rambam's breakdown of the different components of the soul, the different strengths. The Rambam said sometimes they're called different souls, different nefashot. And now the second chapter, before we begin, we should just remind ourselves where the Rambam is headed. This is all an introduction to Pirkei Avot, which is going to be focused on a person's improving himself, improving his soul. And the Rambam said that in order to deal with the soul, in order to help the soul be better, one has to understand the makeup of the soul. So we're holding the second chapter, Shmona Pakim, and the Rambam says that this chapter is going to be focused on understanding the nature of the powers that the soul has, defining the elements of the soul, where the positive and negative qualities are located. The Rambam says that you should know that the rebelliousness or the state of following the Torah are really found in two sections of the soul, of the nefesh. We said that nefesh has to be defined, but for lack of better translation, we're going to call it the soul. And they are the part of the soul that feels, and the part of the soul that arouses. These are the only two parts of the soul where one sins or follows the Torah. And in these two parts, that's where you find every avera and every mitzvah. Anytime Torah tells us do something or don't do something, it is contingent on these two parts of the soul. But the part of the soul that eats, that sustains us, and the part that imagines, that those parts of the soul, there's nothing to do with listening or rebelling, because those parts of the soul a person doesn't have control over, and a person doesn't even know sometimes what they're doing. So therefore a person can't undo what they do or to limit them. These two parts of the soul, this is the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avot, these two parts function when one is sleeping. Person breathes, person digests. You don't have control over that. And the other parts of the nefesh, they don't function when a person is asleep. They are under a person's control, and therefore they are the parts where Hashem gives us a commandment. And the one part which we haven't yet discussed, we've said the two parts where we have mitzvos and averos are the sensation, the ability to feel, and the ability to get aroused. And the two parts of zan, being fed, sustaining oneself, and imagination, those have no mitzvah and avera. But there's one part which the Rambam didn't discuss. The Rambam saying this last part, the brainy, the thought process, there it's a little difficult. So the Rambam says, I say that it could be that this part of the nefesh also has commandments, and those commandments revolve around what one believes in. And one is commanded to believe in the truth. But there's no function, there's no action that this part of the nefesh does. That's why the Rambam says that the mitzvos, which define actions, what we do or are forbidden to do, they are focused on those two parts of the nefesh. But when it comes to discussing improving a person's self, so then there are two ways in which a person improves himself. There's a person's moving up the ladder of traits, and a person's improving himself in his philosophies, in his ways of thought. And corresponding to the ability to move up, there's also the ability to move down. There's the ability for a person to be lacking in his traits, and the ability for a person to be lacking in his philosophies and his understanding of the world. The function of philosophy obviously has to do with the seichel, with the thought process, that part of the nefesh. And that's where we discuss chokhmah, a person's wisdom, and that's where we discuss a person's being able to know cause and effect, and the person's being able to know what in truth exists in the world, is there a creator, etc. And the Rambam now goes off. He says there's also the ability to comprehend the things that are a priori, things that we know even before we have to think about them. We take them as given. And our thought process is based upon them. No one tells you you exist. You know you exist. How do you know you exist? There are certain things that predicate thought, that before a child begins thinking, he already is cognizant of them. What I see, I assume to be what as I see it. And the Rambam says, I don't want to go into that point right now, but an extension of this is how sharp a person is, how much understanding a person has, how quick a person is to grasp new concepts. And this all depends on the strengths of the nefesh, the part of the nefesh which the Rambam calls the seichel, the wisdom, the thought process. But what the Rambam's going to focus on, which is what Pirkei Avos focuses on, is a person's improving his traits. And a person's traits, says the Rambam, that is the focus of the part of the nefesh which is aroused, the chelek hamitorer. And also the part of the person that feels sensation. Even though our ability to feel sensation is really governed by what we're aroused to do. Meaning a person likes certain things, so he's aroused to run after them, to acquire them. And then he's going to use really the part of the nefesh which feels. He could work at a job to make money. That's all serving really the part of the nefesh which is aroused. And the Rambam says that the levels where a person can go up and down are many. For example, the trait of being careful. A person should be careful what he does, how he does it. Having a good eye. Being righteous. Being patient. Being modest. Being content. Being brave. Being trustworthy. These are examples of traits that really stem from a person's... These traits are focused on the part of the nefesh that gets aroused, that arouses him to do things. And if he fixes that part of the nefesh, then he's going to be a careful person in the proper manner. He's going to have a good eye. He's going to look at things that other people have positively. He's going to be righteous. He'll be patient. The question is, what is a person aroused to do? The Jews leave Egypt, and the world hears that they've left, and God has revealed himself and chosen a people. So now, one person gets aroused, I want to join these people, they're godly people, that's Yisro, Jethro. And another group of people, they get aroused, they say, oh, God's revealing himself in the world, we have to go attack, that's Amalek. Both were aroused, both saw the same sequence of events, and both said, I have to do something. And that drove them to do something. When we see things, our reaction, we're aroused to do something, and if we fix our traits, then we're aroused to the positive. Then we'd have a good eye, like Yisro had a good eye. But if we're talking about the parts of the nefesh, the parts that get fed, that get sustained, that imagine, over there you can't discuss whether a person is higher up or less. That's just the way a person is. So, a person can say, is he functioning properly or not? How's his digestive system? Is he digesting well or not? You could say, this person has a good imagination or not a good imagination. You could say, these parts of the nefesh either function correctly or not. Some people imagine things and they can't discern between what they're imagining and what's really going on in the world. So then something's wrong with that part of the nefesh. It's not that the other people have acquired a higher level with regards to this part of the nefesh. The Rambam is stressing that when it comes to the parts of the nefesh that feed and that imagine, those should be healthy. So long as they're healthy and they're functioning properly, so it's true there are differences between people. Some people need to eat more and less. Some people imagine more and less. But that's a question of how healthy they are. When we discuss developing a person's traits, we're focusing on the part of the nefesh that the Rambam calls the part that gets aroused. That's the part that drives him to do things. We all have a drive. And we could direct our drive to positive things. And the Rambam is going to develop how we're supposed to correct our nefesh that our drives will be positive. And now we've finished the second chapter and we'll begin the third chapter. Remember, what are we going to learn? This is all an introduction to Pirkei Avot. And Pirkei Avot is about a person becoming a better person, fixing his traits. And the Rambam had said that if we want to become better people, we have to understand how the nefesh is built in order to understand how to fix it. So the Rambam has defined for us the breakdown of the nefesh into five components. The Rambam has just explained that when we discuss improving a person, we are going to focus on two components of the nefesh primarily. The component of the mitorer, the one that gets aroused, and the part that feels. And slightly, the Rambam says, there is relevance to the part that thinks, because the thought process is what brings us to our beliefs. But when we speak about our traits, the Rambam is focusing on developing the person. And here we should pause and think for a second. You ask the average person, why'd you do that? And people have good reasons. Why'd you come to class tonight? People say, I want to learn Torah. Maybe the reason is because there's good cake, and they thought there might be good cake, but that's not what they're going to say. You ask a person, why'd you fast today? So a person could answer you, well, today Shiva Asar B'Tamas, our sages instituted a fast, that's why I fasted. You tell the person, no, that's not why you fasted. The person says, are you nuts? What other reason would I have to fast today? Most of what we do, if it really stems from thought, then we should have a big question on the Rambam. Why is the Rambam saying that when we develop our traits, we're not going to focus on the part of the nefesh that thinks? If everything we do stems from thought, then that should be the focal point of what we have to develop when we work on our traits. Most of us don't function that way. At best, we think through how to back up our actions with logic. That's at best. At worst, which is most people, we act. We don't really know why we act. And usually we have some kind of vague idea of how we could back it up logically. And when someone will ask us, we'll be able to say, yeah, that's why. But is that why we really did it? For most people, not. Ask most Baalei Tshuva. Did they do Tshuva because they learned all the Jewish philosophies? Or did they attend the Shabbos table and they were turned on by what they saw, and they saw a Jewish home and they said, that's gorgeous, I want a home like that? More people are going to say because of that. Or some other reason that has to do with what they feel more than what they think. Ask the average guy why he married his wife. So he might enumerate a lot of things. But at the end of the day, if he's honest with himself, more likely than not, it wasn't all those things. It's got to be something deeper than that. Something he felt. And in truth, most of what we do stems from what we feel. It doesn't really stem from what we think. We think things through and we try to guide and inhibit our feelings based upon what we think. But we can't say that we really think and that's why we act. At best, again, we think enough to make sure it's logical. To make sure that we won't regret it later. Yeah?
The Rambam is saying that that's okay, or are you just pointing, observing?
I didn't say how all this applies to what the Rambam just said yet. Just saying, I think we should first recognize how we function. Because most people, at first glance, when you ask them, why'd you do something, they'll give a logical reason. And the true reason why most people do most things is because they wanted to. Why they wanted to is a different question. Person could say, I wanted to because I want to be Jewish. Why do you want to be Jewish? Because, okay, that's a difficult one. Everyone's going to have to try and give a true answer to that, but that's a difficult one. You ask a person why he fasted today, it's not because he thought through all the logical reasons and said, okay, I know Torah Shebichsav is true and Torah Shebaalpeh is true and our sages instituted, so I have to follow the institution. A person might say, you know, I don't think it through every day, but really that's the reason why I do everything. But more likely than not, it's not that. It's true that we can't think through everything we do. We draw up certain rules. We say, I thought it through, I'm going to be Jewish. But speak to a person about why he's being Jewish, why he's fasting, more likely than not, it's because he'd feel very, very bad with himself if he didn't. And he'd feel very bad with himself if he didn't, maybe because he's decided that this is the way of life he's going to go. And why did he decide this is the way of life he's going to go? So he might say there's a logical reason, but for most people it's not. usually what we do revolves around feeling. And the Yekis among us are having a hard time hearing this. But I think the non-Yekis among us are definitely going to agree with it. Yeah.
I mean, but it's, I think it has to do with just the complexity of all things. Every, you know, everything has its complexity. So if you say, well, it was because of this, then you're not saying that it was because of that, which is the other side of that thing, whatever that midah or that thing is.
Let's take a simpler example.
Okay.
I once dated a girl who told me that she does everything l'shem shemayim. Everything she does only if this is going to help her in the service of Hashem. So I said, wow, right. I was floored. I was still young, and I believed it. So I asked her, you never eat sweets? So she said, no. I said, you only eat what's going to sustain you for serving your Creator? So she said, yeah. Sweets, there's nothing wrong with it. But you can't say you're doing that to serve your Creator. You could say, in order to serve my Creator, I have to eat. And I know I won't eat as much bread if I don't put some jam on the bread. You could say that. But is that really the reason you put jam on the bread? Or is the reason you put jam on the bread because you like eating bread with jam? That's what you like. It has nothing to do with serving your Creator. Most people do not spend their time thinking before they act, is this going to serve my Creator? And if we were really thinking, and we're all trying to be good Orthodox Jews, then we should think before every action we take, is this going to serve my Creator? Is it better for my service the Creator to eat another piece of cake or leave it for someone else? Well, if I haven't thought about that, then I haven't really thought about the service of my Creator. It could be the answer is better that I eat it. If I don't eat it, I'll be hungry. I won't be able to learn. So I have to take care of myself. It could be not. But most people don't even think about it. What they do think about is, what will everyone think if I take the last piece of cake? That's what they think about. Again, revolving around, how will I feel? Is it worth the feeling for me to take that piece of cake because everyone's going to see it? Again, the focus is, what am I going to feel? Now, if you ask a person, he's built up some kind of defense mechanism. He has some logical reason. You know the story about a couple that's sitting together for supper, and there's a big piece of chicken on the plate and a small piece of chicken on the plate. And the husband takes the big piece, and the wife tells him, why'd you do that? So he says, well, what would you want me to do? So she says, well, if I were taking, then I would take the smaller piece and leave you the bigger piece. So he says, you're right, I would end it up the bigger piece. That's what I did. you can have logical backing for what you did. But why do we do things? Usually we do it based upon what we feel. And the Rambam over here is saying that on the one end, the basis for the decisions, the major decisions of how we're going to function in this world stem from our thought process, the Seichel. And that's why the Rambam says there are mitzvahs that apply to the Seichel. And we could expand on that and say that the major decisions we make, at least on the surface, we're going to try to back them up with Seichel. And theoretically, a person could work from the Seichel. A person could say, I definitely believe this is the right way to go, and I'm going to do it full force. And there were great people who did that. Let's take a few examples. Seichel. I'm not talking about what a person wants. There is a way for tremendous people to overcome with Seichel. There was a famous Greek...
Yeah.
Oh, so the Rambam has limited it. The Rambam has said that developing our seichel has mitzvos that pertain to the beliefs, the mitzvos that are, how much do you believe? Do you believe in Hashem, etc.? But the other developments of traits all revolve around not the seichel. So I'm saying, when we look at that breakdown, we have to remember that even though the Rambam has relegated the seichel to just the mitzvahs of belief, in truth, that is the basis for all other mitzvahs. The first mitzvah, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, so there's the machlokes rishonim. Some say that's a mitzvah, and some say that's an introduction. Hi, I'm God. Now, if I'm God, I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to tell you what to do. Now you have the Ten Commandments. A different breakdown on the Ten Commandments, that Anochi is not one of the Ten Commandments. It's just an introduction. So, obviously, most shuls don't go with that. But yeah, but just a second. So the Rambam is telling us that there's the Seichel is where we have the mitzvos that relate to what we believe. And our focus about developing our traits is going to be on the parts of the nefesh that are not the seichel, the parts that arouse, that drive us to do things that the mitzvos revolve around. And I'm saying that we should recognize that in almost everything we do, we're not doing it based on seichel. Because otherwise this would be very surprising. You read the Rambam and you say, what do you mean? Every action I do, I have to think through. And it's true, every action you should think through. But the question is, do you? More likely than not... That could be from your sechel. That could be that your sechel has concluded that you should follow the Torah on whatever it tells you, and the Torah tells you. Lav dafka, no. When the Jews accepted the Torah, the Jews said, we will do, and then we will listen. And that's an important point. They said, our understanding is not what's going to define what we do. We believe, we've seen Hashem, we understand that Hashem runs the world, and therefore whatever He says is what we will do. Now whether we'll understand it or not, our obedience is not contingent upon our understanding. It doesn't have to come from faith, it could come from knowledge, from understanding. The Rambam says the first mitzvah is to know that Hashem is the one that runs the world. Now the problem is that the Rambam wrote it in Arabic, and for the last 600 years, it's been translated to believe. And then Rav Kapach, Zichrono Levracha, whose yahrzeit was today, came along, and he knew Arabic, and he read the manuscripts, and he said, that's a mistranslation. The Rambam wrote, the mitzvah is to know that Hashem is running the world, not to believe. It's, that's a question of who you listen to. But a person should understand, and in yeshiva they often develop, and we had a whole class on this, the other side, that there's an aspect that a person has to develop within his neshama, the connection to the Torah. A person can't spend his life thinking things through. People don't function based on that. People who try to work only through logic usually don't do much when it comes to religion. There has to be a point where you connect beyond that. But there should also be a point where you understand. You could. The Rambam says that using the Sechel you could connect. And once you've connected, so then you'll do whatever the Torah says, even the things you don't understand. But the Sechel could be the connector point to following the Torah. And according to some opinions, should be the connecting point. Again, you're going down to the details. I don't understand why the details have any relevance.
No, because I'm saying you can't just survive on the Sechel.
But why? If your Sechel connects you with the... If you understand the logic behind the fact that the Torah is true and is God-given, and that's what we're supposed to do in this world, then if that Torah says, sit on your head for 10 minutes every day, and then go outside and walk with your tongue out for 10 minutes every day, that's irrelevant.
But that's not logical.
It doesn't have to be logical. God said so.
There are things.
You're saying just think you're logical, and many things are logical.
But why does it have to be logical? The second you understand logically that it's God-given, what difference does it make what God said? Why does what God say have to agree with my secha? Once I have to understand that He said it. But once I understand He said it, what do I care what He said? If this is what He said, this is what I have to do. Doesn't have to make any sense to me.
It's like you understand.
So, if you had a king was standing here and he tell you, every morning I want you to go out and stand on your head for 10 minutes. Would you have a problem that it didn't make sense to you? You wouldn't like it, but you'd say, that's what he said, that's what I have to do. So now if you understand with your sechel that God gave the Torah and this is what He said to do, so then that's what you have to do, regardless of whether you understand it or you like it.
It's like here's, this is one and one. One plus one makes one. Is that your sechel understands.
Sechel is the intellect, thought. We have chokhmah. Okay.
Then you also understand that.
Okay, that's let's say.
Larger,
that within sechel.
You can't
okay.
understand everything that about.
So this is our conceptual.
So from that, then you can go logically to the step of saying, okay.
Oh, so the Rambam divided conceptualization into sechel and medame. The imagination. Medame is the imagination.
The point is, so with the great sage like Abraham,
of course, because the heart is everything.
I don't think as a boy and living in the here he was living and living.
Well, that's because people who say knowledge of Hashem and people who are religious look at him like you're crazy. Because what does it mean, knowledge of Hashem?
Intrinsic goodness or something like that to destroy his father's eyes. I mean, but how did he come up with that without a
all your power, all your power,
without a teacher, without a
Ken, that's
so
not how can he conceptualize?
But what is your heart? I mean, it's not like your
that's,
heart.
That's wrong.
We don't know
like
what the heart
gut.
Is.
It was the opposite of his.
But I'm saying we can't. It doesn't have words.
So there are different midrashim. There's a midrash that says that Avram said, you walk in the forest, you see a house, you look in the house, and you see a candle lit. You know someone lit that candle. So the Midrash says, Avram said, you look at the world, there's a candle here, God, there's a sun. Who lit that sun? And that's how the Midrash explains that Avram logically deduced that God is running the show. That's one of the midrashim. There are other midrashim, but that's one of the midrashim. The midrash does develop that Avram had purified himself, and he was on a level that the midrash calls it. He had klayot yoatzot. His kidneys gave him advice. They were able to guide him into living a Torah life to the point that the Gemara says Avram fulfilled all the mitzvot in the Torah before the Torah was given. And even the mitzvot that the sages would later institute, like an Erev, the Eruv Tavshirin. And some explain that the mitzvos, if we would only be truly natural, Aaron likes this, if we would really connect with nature, if we would really understand the way the world works and connect with it, then the most natural thing for us to do would be to follow the Torah. But we're so distant from connecting truthfully to our surroundings and the world that we can't connect with the Torah. Now, does that mean that that's how Avram began? I don't think so. I think that Avram began with the logic and developed himself and had a natural inclination to attain the levels where he connected on that high level to the extent that he was keeping the Torah naturally without being commanded to keep the Torah.
Knowledge from the kidneys that they speak about is what we would say today euphemistically as a gut feeling.
I don't know. It seems like it was clearer than that.
I think ultimately, I mean, even somebody that's never read one word of Torah, even somebody that's never can't read anything in his life, on some level, like if we're very simple and listen to ourselves, they understand most of the commandments of. Kill, that's wrong. Don't murder, that's wrong. Do this, that's wrong.
So that's, how far that goes, I don't know. We do find that Cain killed Hevel. It also seems that Cain was embarrassed that he killed Hevel. Certain feelings do seem to be innate, but if you leave it to that, I don't know. The urges are also innate. And the urges always drive us to go the other way, to be animalistic. George Orwell.
Who's he?
Famous writer, United States. Should we begin the third chapter or stand here?
Well, you were telling a story about a girl you were seeing.
I was just bringing that to illustrate that someone sometimes thinks that everything they're doing stems from logic. I didn't bring the punchline, which was an illustration of how her greatest decisions weren't really based on logic at all. If they had been based on logic, she dumped me after 2 dates, but afterwards I looked her up. I wanted to offer someone else. And when I heard what she was looking for, just didn't match with the way she described herself. But it's natural for people to think of themselves as making their decisions based on logic. I'm willing to bet that most of the guys here, if we would have had this discussion before what we just discussed, would have said, sure, I think about what I do. I think before I act. I think that if you'll think about it a little bit more after tonight, you'll recognize that most of what we do does not stem from our thought, process. Someone hits you. You get up. You're all upset. The first thing you did was react emotionally. If someone yells at you, why'd you speak out of turn? Why'd you cut the line? First reaction is, no, I didn't. Then you start thinking. There are a lot of things we do almost by instinct, but it begins with the feeling. And sometimes it goes further with the feeling, and sometimes we constrain our feelings with our thoughts. And then we have to think how much to allow our feelings to do what they want. That guy just insulted me in front of everyone. Then you think, wait, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I should only do this. Maybe I should only do that. So what are we thinking? We're thinking, how much is it logical for me to constrain my emotions? But I didn't start with a clean slate and say, now what should I do logically because he said that? I start with the emotions, and then the thought says, how much should I constrain the emotions? Should I constrain more? Should I constrain less? How much can I get away with? So we saw, now maybe we understand a little bit better, that the Rambam says the main focus of fixing one's traits is going to be on the parts of the nefesh that are mitorer, that arouse a person to do things, and the part that feels. And the Rambam says that the part of the nefesh that thinks, that the Rambam says pertains to the mitzvahs of our beliefs, but most mitzvahs don't revolve around that part of the nefesh. Okay? Want to start the third chapter or stop here and go over to Mishlei? Okay, so we'll continue. What? The ancients would say, says the Rambam, that the soul can be healthy and the soul can be ill. Just as the body can be healthy and the body can be ill.